Good afternoon. 4:30 and 44 degrees in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Dan Conte.
And I'm Arlo Barnett.
It's going to be a 9,000 square foot warehouse. We're hoping that with the addition of this new Moorhead facility, the food bank will be growing a member agency network in the region of Kentucky that's important to us.
Rebecca Price of God's Food Pantry says the groundbreaking for the charity's Moorhead Distribution Center takes place tomorrow.
An Ironton girl has died from the flu.
And the Fleming County Water District is in trouble with the Kentucky Public Service Commission.
In sports, Bengals coach Marvin Lewis wants to ramp up the running game for their big contest with Denver Monday.
But Luke has the stocks.
We'll see patchy drizzle, and it'll be cooler tonight with lows in the mid-30s. The complete forecast is coming up after this news.
A 51-year-old Lewis County woman has been killed in an accident on the AA highway. According to the Mason County Sheriff's Department, the crash happened early this morning near the Maysville Stockyards and took the life of Joan Bailey of Tollsboro. Deputies have no other details at this time.
Ohio's health department is confirming that a 15-year-old Ironton girl has died from the flu. Officials say Allison Eastham passed away on November 29th after being admitted to a hospital for treatment of the virus and double pneumonia. She was a sophomore at Ironton High School and a member of the school's marching band. Jamie Compton is the teen's aunt. She spoke with WSAZ.
You don't think that a 15-year-old kid is going to just up and die, basically, from something that people get every single day.
The health department says about 450 people across Ohio have been hospitalized with influenza this year, compared to 135 cases at this time a year ago. Some schools have closed because of high absentee rates.
The Western Fleming County Water District has run afoul of the Kentucky Public Service Commission. MSPR's Sam Steyert has the story.
The PSC says a field review of the district's financial records found that the utility completed a major construction project at its water treatment facilities without obtaining a certificate of necessity. The PSC also determined that the Western Fleming District obtained a $2.5 million loan to finance the project but did not get its permission to issue indebtedness. Both are violations of state law. The Public Service Commission has ordered members of the Water District's governing board to respond to the allegations within 30 days. For more at State Public Radio News, I'm Sam Steyert.
The PSC scheduled a hearing on the matter for March 26th. The commission's order was filed today.
The Huntington Herald Dispatch is reporting that an 80-year-old Ashland man has been indicted by a Boyd County grand jury on charges of attempted kidnapping and attempted sodomy. The indictments were returned Monday against Ermal Copley of Dixon Street. Commonwealth's attorney David Justice says the charges are in connection with an incident last month involving an 11-year-old boy. Copley is accused of luring the child onto his front porch and then trying to force him inside the house. Police say the boy managed to escape and called for help. Copley is held in the Boyd County Detention Center on $100,000 bond.
Former Martin Mayor Ruth Thomasine Robinson has been sentenced to 90 months in prison following her conviction for violating voters' civil rights. A federal jury convicted the ex-Floyd County official on those charges in May. Prosecutors brought the case against Robinson in connection with the 2012 general election. They accuse her of participating in a scheme to intimidate poor and disabled citizens in order to gain their votes.
According to WIMT, a special education teacher in Johnson County schools has been charged with manufacturing methamphetamine. Timothy Baldwin was arrested at his car in Thealca Park. Another man who was with him, Michael Peters, was taken into custody as well. Police claim they found meth labs on the dashboard of the auto and confiscated a backpack filled with materials to make meth. The arrests were made Monday night. Baldwin was reportedly employed at Central Elementary School.
A groundbreaking takes place in Moorhead tomorrow for the construction of a food distribution warehouse that will serve 11 surrounding counties. The project is funded by God's Pantry Food Bank, whose new Moorhead location will become the organization's fourth distribution center in central and eastern Kentucky. Rebecca Price is a spokeswoman for God's Pantry.
The groundbreaking is particularly important because, you know, we want to make sure that we take this opportunity to, you know, publicly thank the supporters that have helped us head this campaign. We're wanting to make sure that we can grow our distribution in this area to reach the people that currently aren't being serviced by our food bank, and also increase capacity so that we can reach our distribution goal in our 50-county service area so that we can reach those 252,000 people that need our help.
The groundbreaking for the Moorhead Regional Distribution Center will be at the MMRC Regional Business Park on Kentucky 801 at 3 p.m. tomorrow.
Rouen's new judge executive plans to jump right into the process of helping to find a location for the county's new 300-bed jail when he takes office next month. With Moorhead State University scheduled to take over the property where the current jail resides in 2016, Walter Blevin says a decision on where to put the new lockup needs to be made quickly. However, before a final decision is made, Blevins will listen to the concerns of local residents.
But we'll still have hearings and try to let people know why we have to do this, and let them come before the court, or myself, either one, and explain their concerns about it. I think we can allay some of those concerns. I mean, it's going to look like a jail, of what I understand. It's going to be, you know, kind of blend in with whatever area you're in.
Blevin says he'd had experience in getting detention centers built in populated areas before, noting that as a state senator, he helped get state prisons constructed near West Liberty and Sandy Hook.
Moorhead's mayor says creating a new nuisance ordinance for the town has been a complicated process. City Council has worked on the issue for nearly a year, and David Perkins admits he never thought it would take this long.
You don't go into those things thinking that necessarily, but sometimes when you get into the meat of it, it's like, we better watch this or we better watch that. And so things come up that you weren't necessarily aware of, but then you become aware of and say, well, we're going to have to, how do we deal with this or so forth.
City Council recently tabled the ordinance, saying it needs more time to finalize it. The ordinance will eventually deal with such things as unkept lawns and junked appliances and cars that sit in yards. Mayor Perkins, though, won't be involved in the final solution. He leaves office at the end of the month and will be replaced in the new year by Jim Tom Trent.
Ashland Mayor Chuck Charles says last winter's water crisis was a learning experience. That's why, he says, city and Boyd County officials met recently to discuss how local governments can coordinate their response to potential emergencies.
I think it was a great meeting for all the elected officials and the new elected officials to get together and just strategize on, you know, coming together in different types of emergencies.
Charles says Ashland's water crisis was a regional problem since neighboring communities get their water from the city. Parts of Ashland and outlying areas were without service for several days because of numerous waterline ruptures.
Ashland City Manager Benjamin Bitter says lower gas prices have enabled the city to save thousands of dollars on fuel, but they're also reducing the tax revenue Ashland receives for street maintenance. Since Kentucky's gas tax is pegged to the wholesale cost of fuel, Bitter says the city is bracing for a decrease in its funding available for road repairs.
In January, the new gas tax takes effect. A lot of people will have read that the gas tax will drop by about 4 cents per gallon. Well, that will mean about a $40,000 hit to what our fund gets for street repair and road repair. And so that probably means one or two or three streets less to get paved next year.
Overall, the drop in Kentucky's gas tax is expected to result in a loss of nearly $150 million to the state road and bridge fund.
A new report says Kentucky's prevailing wage law increases labor costs by as much as 51% for some public projects. The Legislative Research Commission said a study of 12 public school projects increased labor costs by about $600,000. A study of 17 state government projects found the prevailing wage hiked labor costs by 6.7%. Democrats said the report was flawed because it did not look at whether the prevailing wage law increased the total cost of construction projects. They argued paying workers higher wages lowers overall construction costs by increasing productivity. A panel of state lawmakers decided not to adopt the report after a two-hour meeting that featured some heated exchanges. Republicans have generally favored repealing the prevailing wage law, while Democrats usually support it.
The Kentucky General Assembly next year may be voting on whether to abolish the death penalty. Bipartisan legislation calling for just that is expected to be introduced during the short session that begins in January. State Representative Brad Montell will oppose the bill. The Shelby County Republican appeared Monday on KET's Kentucky Tonight.
I would hope that we could make some really common sense changes that would prevent us from sentencing someone who's innocent to the death penalty, but at the same time not take it off the table when we absolutely can justify it.
State Representative David Floyd says he'll co-sponsor legislation in the House to do away with capital punishment in Kentucky. The Nelson County Republican says application of the law that allows it is deeply flawed.
If we can accept a system that occasionally kills an innocent person, and I cannot, if we can accept that, then there are many other arguments why the application of the death penalty as it currently exists in Kentucky have so many problems, and it's beyond repair. It's done inequitably across county lines, perhaps across racial lines. The cost to the system is extraordinary.
Floyd wants to replace the death penalty with life in prison without the possibility of parole. His comments also came on KET's Kentucky Tonight.
The Ohio Supreme Court has upheld a death sentence for a Cincinnati man convicted of killing his ex-girlfriend and two young children. Mark Pickens was sentenced to die in 2010 after a jury found him guilty in the shootings of 19-year-old Noelle Washington, her infant son, and a 3-year-old girl she was babysitting a year earlier. The court's ruling was issued today and rejected Pickens' arguments that questioned how jurors were selected. Pickens was 19 at the time of the shootings.
Kentucky is doing a lousy job when it comes to preventing children from smoking and helping those who do quit. Danny McGoldrick is with the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids. He says a new report shows that the Commonwealth ranks 39th in the U.S. in that category.
In Kentucky, where smoking rates are higher than the national average among both kids and adults, we're doing a particularly poor job. Almost 9,000 deaths every year from tobacco use. Almost $2 billion spent treating tobacco-caused disease.
McGoldrick says Kentucky will collect more than $347 million in revenue this year from the 1998 tobacco settlement and taxes. However, he says only 7/10 of the money will be spent on tobacco prevention programs.
Three state judges say they plan to rule in the next 2 months on a case that could lower property taxes for Kentucky homeowners while stripping more than half of the funding for most of the state's public libraries. The issue is what law public libraries use to set their tax rates. A lawsuit originating in northern Kentucky says voters must approve any tax increase, but library officials argue another state law allows them to raise taxes up to 4% each year. The Campbell County Public Library System says if the court orders it to calculate its taxes differently, it would cut the system's funding by about 60%. Former Kentucky Library Association President Lisa Rice has said the ruling could put many libraries in a tough spot.
Just imagine trying to run your own household on your income from 1979 and then add to that an added debt service.
Another 99 public library systems use the same law to set their tax rates.
Japan is strengthening its connection to Kentucky. Here's KNN's Will Clark.
The Japanese Consulate General in Nashville has appointed David Carpenter to be the honorary consul of Japan in Lexington. Carpenter, who is an American citizen, has the power to do business on behalf of Japan when asked.
When I'm on the clock, so to say, on Japanese duties, then I'm classified as a Japanese diplomat.
Carpenter's appointment's good for 5 years. He's replacing former Governor Martha Lane Collins, who's held the position since 1991. I'm Will Clark.
Now your weather forecast for the MSPR listening area, including the cities of Ashland, Campton, and Farmers. Tonight it will be cloudy. We'll see a 20% chance of rain and freezing drizzle. Cooler with lows around 32 degrees. Tomorrow we'll see partly cloudy skies, cooler with highs around 40. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with lows in the upper 20s. On Thursday, it will be cloudy. We'll see flurries possible in the morning, then sprinkles or flurries possible in the afternoon with highs around 38 degrees. Thursday night will be mostly cloudy. We'll see flurries possible in the evening with lows around 28. And on Friday, partly cloudy. We'll see highs in the upper 30s. That night will be cloudy. We'll see a 50% chance of rain or snow and lows around 32 degrees. On Saturday, it'll be cloudy. We'll see snow or rain likely. A chance of precipitation 70% with highs around 38 degrees. Saturday night, cloudy with a 30% chance of rain or snow and lows in the lower 30s. And on Sunday through Monday night at the start of next week, mostly cloudy, highs around 42 degrees with lows in the upper 20s. It is currently 47 degrees in Ashland. It's 44 right now in Flemingsburg, 50 degrees in Inez, 42 degrees in both Lexington and Winchester, and it's 44 degrees here on the campus of Morehead State University.
4:46, you are tuned to Mountain Edition on Morehead State Public Radio. And it is mighty nice to have your company on this Tuesday afternoon. On our feature segment, environmental and public health groups are anticipating the first ever national rules governing the storage and disposal of coal ash. And the Environmental Protection Agency faces a court-ordered deadline on December 19th for finalizing them. The Kentucky News Connection's Greg Stottlemyre has more.
Federal rules about the storage and disposal of coal ash are expected from the EPA this week. The Sierra Club's Thomas Pierce says Kentucky is in the center of the storm about public health risks caused by coal ash, a toxic byproduct created when coal-fired power plants generate electricity. Pierce says rules that classify coal ash as a hazardous substance are long overdue.
What we're talking about is protecting the public health, protecting the public good. Our rivers, our streams, and no one group should have the right to pollute them and make them unsafe for the rest of us.
Pierce recently met with the White House Office of Management and Budget to make the Sierra Club's case for the first ever federal rules. It is among 11 environmental and public health groups that won a lawsuit last year, forcing the EPA to meet a December 19th deadline for new protections. Kentucky is fifth in the nation in coal ash generation, with more than 40 disposal sites. Mark Romines lives a quarter mile from LG&E's largest coal-fired power plant, Mill Creek. He says he's crossing his fingers that the EPA will put stricter regulations on coal ash.
Well, with the dust coming off the mountains they've got over here and the possibility of that wall to the ash pond breaching into our neighborhood, that's two of my biggest concerns right there.
Romine says he and others in his southwest Louisville neighborhood have health problems they blame on coal ash. But the American Coal Ash Association Educational Foundation claims coal ash provides environmental and economic benefits without harm to public health and safety when properly managed. Soon-to-be Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said he will use budget legislation to limit overreaching regulations by the EPA. But Pierce says coal ash limits are needed now because, in his words, we may never have another chance. He wants the EPA to stop the disposal of wet coal ash, clean up current storage sites, and require operating permits for new sites.
Guarantees federal regulations and enforcement, that then the states are going to maybe someday might be held accountable.
I'm Greg Stottlemyre reporting for Kentucky News Connection.
It is 4:48, all things considered, from NPR at 5 o'clock, and Zach has sports in 30 seconds.
Support for programming on MSPR is provided by NS2, presenting Grammy Award-winning songwriter and Americana music legend John Prine, with special guest Leo Kottke in concert at the Keith Albee Performing Arts Center in Huntington, 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, April 25th. Tickets available now at all Ticketmaster locations and online at Ticketmaster.com.
The first place Bengals are preparing for their Monday night showdown. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Mountain Edition Sports. My name is Zachary Sinviski. After ruining Johnny Manziel's debut on Sunday and keeping their playoff hopes alive and well, the Cincinnati Bengals head coach Marvin Lewis was pleased with his team's effort on Sunday. As the Bengals prepare this week for a Monday night showdown against Peyton Manning's Broncos, Lewis believes polishing up the running game and not turning over the ball will be keys they need to focus in on practice this week.
We did good things in the running game, obviously, but we got to continue with that. And some of the details of it still be better and, you know, really push hard at that. I thought in a passing game, Andy did a good job a couple times avoiding pressure. We want to eliminate those pressures and make sure at all times we don't put the ball at risk.
Denver clinched the AFC West last week with a 22-10 win over the Chargers. The Bengals currently sit atop the AFC North at 9-4-1, but with a loss, it could be anyone's division, with the Baltimore Ravens and Pittsburgh Steelers not far behind at 9-5. In college football news, former Nebraska coach Bo Pelini will be the next coach at Youngstown State, an FCS school in his hometown. He was fired last month after 8 seasons at Nebraska. Pelini was 67-27 with the Cornhuskers, but never won a conference championship. Ohio State offensive coordinator Tom Herman has signed on to become the head coach at Houston, but he will still work for the Buckeyes in the college football playoff. Herman will receive a 5-year, $6.75 million deal from Houston. The Morehead State men's basketball team is preparing for a road game tomorrow at Wisconsin-Green Bay. The Eagles have dropped 4 straight and are just 4-8 this season. Associate head coach Dylan Howard insists MSU is better than its record would indicate. He believes the Eagles have been victimized by a tough schedule.
You try to work your schedule to where you kind of have some breaks in there. Unfortunately, this year, it just didn't work out to where we're playing a game, maybe travel a day, and then we play another game. And that's going to happen when we go to Green Bay, and then we travel back home, then we play Northern Kentucky on a Friday. You know, it's just the luck of the draw this year that our schedule was pretty tough and our travel was pretty tough.
Green Bay is 7-2 this year. Wednesday's game tips off at 8 p.m. With his team falling Monday at home to East Tennessee State, Morehead State women's basketball coach Greg Todd will now take the Eagles to South Carolina Upstate for a Wednesday night contest. Todd is hoping for a better effort from his squad, which turned over the ball 18 times in a loss to ETSU.
We've got to clean up some things defensively, and hopefully we can learn from this game. And got a good Upstate team on Wednesday. They're undefeated on their home court, so non-conference schedule's been tough, but we knew going in it was going to be a challenge.
The MSU women will be out tomorrow to improve on their 4-6 record. Upstate is 5-5. In college basketball, the Arizona Wildcats are the third-ranked team in the weekly Associated Press men's basketball poll. Tonight, the Cats of Coach Sean Miller are home to Oakland, with an eye on getting their 11th win in as many games this season. The only other top 10 game tonight has 9th-ranked Texas at home to Lipscomb. The Round County boys basketball team will attempt to add to its 4-1 early season record Wednesday night when the Vikings visit Menifee County. Senior guard Ryan Callahan leads Round with an average of 18 points per game. But Coach Sean Thacker says it's critical to the Vikes to be able to score on nights when the senior guard isn't hitting shots.
When that happens, those other kids have to be prepared and ready. And when they're scoring along with him, you know, that just kind of helps that.
Menifee is 1-4 this season. Cincinnati Reds utility man Skip Schumacher has reportedly made major strides in recent weeks as he rehabs from shoulder reconstruction surgery. Manager Brian Price told the MLB Network that he remains cautiously optimistic that Scrappy Shoemaker will be ready to go by opening day.
And we want him to be 100% healthy because this is a high on-base percentage guy that does a lot of great things for us other than just be a gutty player. I mean, he's a really good baseball player.
Limited to 83 games last season, Shoemaker batted just .235 in his first season with the Reds. And rounding out MLB news, the Los Angeles Angels have acquired outfielder Matt Joyce from the Tampa Bay Rays in exchange for right-handed reliever Kevin Jaspin. Veteran free agent Michael Morse has an agreement in place with the Miami Marlins on a 2-year, $8 million contract. The Kansas City Royals have reached an agreement with free agent outfielder Alex Rios on a 1-year, $11 million contract. The Cubs have agreed to a 1-year contract worth $4.5 million with free agent reliever Jason Mott. Mott has spent his whole career with the Cardinals and was their closer in 2011 when they won the World Series. And finally, Yankees GM Brian Cashman told the Associated Press today that Alex Rodriguez is no longer an everyday player and will be a DH this season for the team. The Ashland Independent has named its all-boys area soccer team for the year. MSPR's Tanner Boyd has more.
Getting the most representation on this year's squad is Rowan County. Five Vikings and their coach, Max Hammond, got their berth this year, including junior Larry Whalen, who's been named All-Area Player of the Year. Whalen's teammates, Trevor Simer, Justin Graham, and Alan Mays are also on the team. Next up was East Carter with three players, Connor Green, Tristan Hall, and Evan Huddle. Boyd County and Ashland each had two. From the Lions are Reed Rousey and Nicholas Trafagan, and John Pina and Alex Donaldson represent the Tomcats. And finishing it off are Paintsville's Luke Daniels and West Carter's T.J. Brickles.
That's all for sports. Thanks again for tuning in. I'm Zachary Sinvisky.
Support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics. I'm online at msueagles.com. Men's basketball will host Northern Kentucky at 7 p.m. on Friday, December 19th in MSU's Academic Athletic Center. Tickets and more information from the MSU Eagle Ticket Office at 783-2386 or online at msueagles.com.
Good afternoon from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons. This is Bud Luke with your closing stock market report for MSU Public Radio. U.S. stocks fell for a sixth session out of the last seven today after another day of gyrations as equities tracked the price of oil and pondered the impact of lower energy costs and Russia's economic troubles on policy decisions by the Federal Reserve. And, of course, Wall Street hears from the Fed on Wednesday, with the central bank gathering to consider the timing and size of interest rate hikes and whether to reiterate its vow to maintain rates low for a considerable period. And at the close, the Dow showing a loss of 111.97 at 17,068.87. The S&P 500 was down 16.89 at 1972.74, and the NASDAQ Composite was down 57.32 at 4547.83. New York Stock Exchange breadth was 17 to 12 in favor of losing stocks over winners, and after falling to lows not seen since the spring of 2009, crude oil futures for January delivery got as low actually as $53.60 a barrel and then shot up $1.24 to a high of $57.15 a barrel, and the actual closing price was $55.93, and this was up 2 cents actually on the day but did halt a four-day losing streak. New home construction in the U.S. topped 1 million on an annualized rate in November, while housing starts fell 1.6% and building permits declined 5.2% last month. The CBOE Volatility Index, a measure of investor uncertainty and fear, rose nearly 16% to finish at 23.6. Boeing led blue chip gainers today. That included actually seven of the 30 Dow components finishing with gains. Boeing doing well after the plane manufacturer said it would hike its quarterly dividend by 25%. The U.S. dollar declined against the currencies of major U.S. trading partners, and the yield on the 10-year Treasury note fell 7 basis points in a flight to safety, finishing at 2.05%. And gold futures for February delivery turned lower, finishing down $13.40 at $1,194.30 an ounce. Turning out to individual stocks, it was Kroger down 3 cents at $61.50, Walmart down 96 cents at $82.98, CSX up 14 cents at $34.67, U.S. Bancorp down 36 cents at $43.09, Apple down $1.48 at $106.75, and Marathon Petroleum was up 84 cents at $82.21. Reporting for MSU Public Radio, this is Bud Luke from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons.
Support for MSPR comes from the Paramount Arts Center, presenting White Christmas the Musical, based on the classic Paramount Pictures film and featuring 17 songs by Irving Berlin, including Blue Skies, How Deep is the Ocean, and the perennial holiday classic White Christmas. Evening performances at 7:30 p.m. on December 18th, 19th, and 20th, and at 3 p.m. on Saturday, December 20th. Reserved seat tickets are now available at 606-324-0007 and online at ParamountArtsCenter.com.
And your weather forecast for tonight will be cloudy. We'll see a 20% chance of rain, cooler with lows around 32 degrees. It's 44 right now in Moorhead.
And that's it for Mountain Edition this afternoon. We had help from Chuck Baraz, Tanner Boyd, Joshua Grandison, Paul Hitchcock, Zach Sanvisky, Kristen Brown, and Sam Steyer. From the Kentucky News Connection, Greg Stottlemyre, and from KNN, Will Clark. This is Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY Morehead, and translator W202BHINS. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.org. For Arlo Barnett and all of the MSPR News team, I'm Dan Conte, MSPR News. ATC is next. It's 5 o'clock.